I ask the chance to speak privately to your boyfriend.
I really don't think you need to do that, Alice began.
It is every father's right to put a touch of fear into his daughter's suitor,
Mr. Adair said, turning toward Nick. It's fine, Alice, Nick assured her, flashing a confident and relaxed grin. I'll be inside in a minute or two.
Nick, you really don't need to...
Don't be silly, Nick said, cutting her off. A gentleman covets the right to speak earnestly with his lady's father.
Okay, I guess,
Alice said. She walked slowly back to Melbrook. Both Nick and her father kept her in their peripheral vision until she was in the door, but neither took their focus off the other. It was only after the door had solidly shut behind her that words were at last spoken.
You're not actually dating Alice,
Mr. Adair said simply. You're going to slash the shit out of Mr. Venders' company, Nick replied. Mr. Adair raised an eyebrow.
What makes you say that?
You called first. You show your hand, Nick said.
Fine,
Mr. Adair agreed.
You're too smart for her. She was too comfortable when you touched her around her father for there to be any legitimate intimacy. You don't particularly care for her, and she was not nearly nervous enough. Shall I continue?
No, Nick said. That was good. You're a smart man, and a good liar.
That's how you knew I planned to gut the company?
Yes. Remove humanity, and it's a simple business decision. I'm sure you'll find a fancy way to word the contract, but it was a simple deduction to make. It's what I would have done, Nick said.
That might be the first thing you've said all night that I believe,
Mr. Adair said.
Your act did cheer my daughter, though, so I suppose I owe you some thanks.
Consider the meal thanks enough, Nick said. Are we done here?
Depends. Are you planning on chatting up the younger Venders and letting her know about my business intentions?
Not even slightly, Nick said. You played along with my ruse. I'll ignore yours. You were wrong about something, though.
Do tell.
I care enough about Alice to tell her father what a bastard he is for baiting and switching the poor girl with a visit like that.
She loathes business dinners, and I needed her attendance in order to secure the meal,
Mr. Adair said unapologetically. I didn't expect you to be sorry, Nick said. Just felt you should know that you're an asshole.
Nothing new, I assure you,
Mr. Adair replied. Good. Now we're done, Nick said. He began walking toward Melbrook. As soon as he opened the door, he saw Alice waiting, pacing along the floor.
How was it?
Standard dad stuff, Nick said, slipping into his usual persona. Touch my daughter wrong and I'll have the FBI and the CIA erase you from existence. Nothing new.
That's good, at least. A little surprising from him, but good.
Yeah. Now, if you don't mind, that heavy meal has me tuckered out. I need to get some sleep, Nick said.
Oh, yeah, no problem,
Alice said, stepping out of his way.
But I just wanted to say thanks.
Don't worry about it, Nick said, waving her off. You saved my life. It's the least I could do.
I know, but... still.
We're cool, Alice, Nick said gently. Helping each other in rough spots is what friends are for. Alice smiled.
I'm starting to realize that.
97.
Sounds like you did a real good thing,
Jerry commented as he chomped into the greasy, cheese-soaked burger before him. Sure, it was a great thing, I showed one of the people I live with that there's more to me than the persona I've been rocking all year. I spent the evening with some truly boring people, and I managed to call one of the richest men on the planet an asshole, Nick summed up. He fiddled with his sunglasses, getting used to them once more. It was smart choices all around.
You called him an asshole while sticking up for his kid,
Jerry pointed out.
There's thankfully few fathers in the world who can hold a grudge against that.
He very well could be one of them, Nick said. What's done is done, though. Alice's night was a lot better than what it would have been without me.
I'm proud of you, Campbell,
Jerry said sincerely. Glad to hear it, because I think we both know I didn't do all that for her, Nick said. Jerry simply nodded his head.
So what else is going on this weekend?
Tomorrow... Well, I guess today now, Nick said, checking his watch. It was past 2 in the morning. Anyway, today they take the parents down to the underground levels and show them their kids' classrooms. There's a cute speech by the dean and the opportunity to meet the coaches. For the less trusting of parents, I'm sure they can ask for progress reports as well. Jerry wrinkled his nose.
Seems more like high school than college.
Agreed, which is why we won't be attending. Honestly, I think they only do it because it's more palatable for a parent to actually see what their child is going through than to just know they're being trained in some mysterious program. Giving them a weekend is the path of least annoyance for the school, Nick speculated.
You're probably dead on with that one,
Jerry agreed.
If we're skipping the function, what did you have planned?
Nick shrugged. Nothing too exciting. I thought we'd jump in my car and I'd show you the town. Jerry laughed.
How about we take mine instead? I got a real nice one from the rental company.
You trying to say something about my ride?
Not at all, kid. Not at all. Did you end up going with the wanted on a slot machine lie?
Yep, Nick said.
Why not just tell people you bought it? Tons of kids buy cars. It wouldn't have made you stand out,
Jerry said. Nick shook his head. Too responsible. I'm trying to capture the image of a guy who is irresponsible and flies by the seat of his pants. Planning and saving for a car doesn't mesh as well as just cheating and winning it.
Fair point, I suppose,
Jerry agreed.
Still not sure why you insisted on a bug, though.
I can't win too much. If I'd brought back a Ferrari or something, people would have felt jealousy. Winning a bug, though, that's a cute anecdote at best.
I see where you're coming from, but it still makes me chuckle,
Jerry said.
I mean, if I told the girls that Nicholas Campbell was driving around in a bug, they'd bust a gut laughing.
Which is why it will never leave Lander, right? Nick asked. Jerry gave Nick a big smile.
I'm waiting to see your grades before I go making any promises.
Alice still couldn't sleep. She drifted off from time to time, but the rest was always shallow, and the dreams too vivid. She had tried a glass of milk, a warm shower, and even counting sheep, yet sleep was still remaining elusive to her. The most troubling part was she knew exactly why. She couldn't sleep because of Nick. Alice had grown up with her only social interactions taking place in the world of high society. She'd met with diplomats, entrepreneurs, and politicians, and had slowly learned to see through the lies in their smiles. They were all two-faced, and eventually Alice was able to penetrate their disguises, noticing the small tics and habits that didn't go along with the person they were pretending to be. She'd thought herself quite good at it when she arrived at Lander, ready to classify and manipulate everyone in sight. She hadn't been prepared for what greeted her, though. An entire mass of people her age who didn't bother with such pretense. most of whom couldn't, actually. It seemed like people were more occupied with finding out who they were than in deciding who they wanted everyone to see them as. Maybe that was why she had missed it. She'd eventually stopped looking after weeks of seeing no double faces. No, that wasn't it. Blaming her lax observations didn't give enough credit where it was due. Sure, she'd stopped trying to see through people, but even if she'd been on top of her game all the time, Alice was certain Nick still would have slipped by her. He'd always been the same guy, smarting off, acting up, making stupid comments and organizing waste-of-time events. Even the stupid glasses were just him wanting to be noticed. Yet tonight, he'd taken them off and effortlessly been someone else. Someone charming, smart, sophisticated, and amiable. There had been no trace of the old Nick, from the way he moved to something as simple as opening a car door. Everything he did had suited this new persona of his. Had she met him for the first time tonight, she would have never imagined the version she'd known for the last several months could exist. So now, Alice was lying in her bed, staring up at the ceiling, unable to find sleep. Was she that much worse at seeing through people than she thought? Or was Nick that much better than she was? Either way, it was curious. Under any other circumstance, she would have banged on Mary's door to compare notes and try and put things together. It didn't feel quite right, though. Not when he had shown Alice this part of himself in order to help her. She wouldn't go around stirring up trouble for him in response to his kindness. She would keep her curiosity and observations to herself. One thing was certain, though. Alice was definitely paying attention again. 98.
Thank you again for taking the time out of your lives to come and visit us here at Lander University, Dean Blaine said, circling the group back to the lifts where they had entered an hour and a half ago. This concludes our tour of the facility, and I hope you all now have a greater understanding and appreciation for the education being taught to your children.
The tour had gone off pretty well. They almost always did. The gyms were closed, no classes were held, and every non-freshman student had their ability to use the lifts disconnected for 2 hours when the parents were wandering around. It was always officially billed as technical difficulties. The older students, however, had long ago reached the obvious conclusion. Nobody wanted a problem to occur when outsiders were around. This crop had been well-behaved, and Dean Blaine was letting out mental sighs of relief that he would soon be passing the buck to George and Persephone.
Now, we've reserved a dining hall just for you folks today, where you can eat with Coach George and Coach Persephone, Dean Blaine explained. You can talk with them about your children, or just relax and meet the other parents. The whole area will be secure, so there's no need to worry about spilling the beans on any student's secret identity. Though I would remind you that outside of there and here, utilizing the utmost discretion is advised.
The parents nodded appreciatively and began filing toward the elevators. As they moved past, Dean Blaine made an effort to see which group of adults was with which student. A dean should be able to recognize his charge's families after all. It was clear not all of the students had come, though more had turned out than usual. Dean Blaine noticed Shane DeSoto walking to the lifts with his older sister and their parents, as well as an older gentleman. There was something slightly familiar about the older man, but Dean Blaine couldn't place it before he was out of sight. It seemed Roy Daniels was here with his mother, a dowdy woman with a persistent smile. Looking at her, it was hard to believe she'd raised a child as rambunctious as Roy, though it explained quite a bit about Herschel. Sasha Foster had both parents with her, a middle-aged couple that had been particularly wide-eyed during the tour.
"Blaine,"
said a soft, familiar voice next to him, stealing him from his thoughts.
"Miriam," Dean Blaine said warmly. "I was hoping you'd stop to chat before you left."
He clasped the woman's hand briefly and squeezed, only for a moment. Miriam was middle-aged and holding up well under her years. She had shoulder-length blonde hair and tan skin from a life spent living near the ocean.
"Of course,"
she said, returning the smile Dean Blaine hadn't realized he was giving.
"I know we can talk to the coaches, but I wanted to speak with you directly and see how things were going."
Dean Blaine glanced at the platforms carrying parents and students back to the surface. It was slowly thinning the crowd. There were clearly several trips left, though.
"I'd love to, Miriam. This is probably not the best place, though. Would you like to join me in my office?"
"That would be fine. Thank you, Blaine."
"Will he be all right?"
Dean Blaine asked.
"Certainly. I'll let him know I'll be meeting him a bit later for lunch,"
Miriam assured the dean.
"Excellent. Well then, let us away,"
Dean Blaine told her. The trip was short. Dean Blaine's office was relatively close to the lifts, just in case he needed to get out in a hurry. That feature seemed to smack more of the abandoned ship mentality than Blaine preferred, but he hadn't been around when they designed the place, and it would be an enormous hassle to fix now. They entered the office door, and Dean Blaine poured them both a drink. He already knew how Miriam took her scotch, so he didn't bother asking. Many things about people might change as the years wear on, but that feature seemed to remain constant.
"Thank you,"
Miriam said, accepting the glass. She glanced inside.
"Halfway full with 3 cubes. Impressive."
"The important things tend to stick in my head,"
Dean Blaine said, as he settled into his high-backed leather chair.
"Tell me how you've been."
"As good as can be expected,"
she said.
"I went back to school and started my nursing degree a few months back. Now that I'm alone in the house, I'm thinking about downgrading to a condo. I haven't told my son yet. I'm not sure how he'd take his childhood home being swept out from under him."
Dean Blaine smirked.
"You managed to steer us on topic remarkably quickly. Okay, let's talk about your son."
He reached into his desk drawer and rummaged around briefly. Within a few minutes, he extracted a manila envelope. Dean Blaine set it on the table and skimmed the contents. He already knew most of them off the top of his head.
"Chad Taylor,"
Dean Blaine said, reading off the front page.
"Currently ranked top of his class in combat. Tested exceptionally well during the first semester finals. Expected to easily stay at the top of the class when the next trials are held at year's end. As for above ground, he's pulling straight A's. All in all, he's a model student."
"I know all of that, Blaine,"
Miriam said.
"I was more talking about how he's adjusting to being here. You know, seeing his father's alma mater, walking the same halls, taking the same classes. I wasn't sure how he'd acclimate."
"I think he's doing fine,"
Dean Blaine assured her.
"Define doing fine for me, please. Does he have any friends?"
"Certainly. He spends most of his time with Shane DeSoto and Michael Clark,"
Dean Blaine said.
I see. And what are the ranks of these boys?
Miriam asked.
Well, 2 and 3, respectively.
So he has training partners.
Miriam assessed with a sigh.
I suppose asking about a girlfriend is out of the question, then.
To my knowledge, he hasn't become intimate with any of the female students yet,
Dean Blaine admitted.
How about male? I'll take what I can get here.
Miriam.
Oh, I know,
she said.
It's just frustrating. He's such a good boy, yet all he does is think about training and getting stronger and being like his dad. You know he didn't apply to any other schools? Only Lander.
We do have a very prestigious reputation.
Come on, Blaine. Lander is great, but the other 4 schools give out hero certifications just as valid as yours. Everyone hedges their bets.
Perhaps Chad simply knew he would be able to take his pick,
Dean Blaine suggested. Miriam shook her head.
No, it was because he wanted to go to the same place. If you'd turned him down, he would have just kept applying, year after year, until you let him in. He is stubborn as a drunken mule.
I suppose that makes his path toward emulating his father at least a little bit shorter, then,
Dean Blaine said. Miriam let out a short, barking laugh.
You may have a point at that.
She set her glass down and glanced at her watch.
I really should be getting to that lunch now.
Of course. I've got some things to do as well,
Dean Blaine said, shuffling papers that were previously arranged quite correctly.
I appreciate you humoring me checking up on him,
Miriam Taylor said, rising from her seat.
I just worry. You know how it is.
Indeed I do,
Dean Blaine agreed.
I hope to see you again before I leave. If not, at least you'll be coming around for Easter.
About that, Dean Blaine said haltingly. Now that I'm an authority figure over your son, I'm not sure if that's such a good idea.
Nonsense, Miriam said. You got off the winter holidays with that excuse, and I've been kicking myself for letting you ever since. You'll come to Easter at our house in a few months, and you'll bring your famous chocolate pies. Not one argument about it.
Dean Blaine contemplated protesting, then thought better of it.
You win, as usual, Miriam. Have fun at lunch.
Miriam wrinkled her nose.
Blaine, have you forgotten I went to Lander too? I know what to expect from the food.
99.
This is certainly colorful cuisine they serve,
Mrs. Daniels said, working her way through the plate.
Do you happen to know if anyone horribly offended the cooks in some way?
Nope, that's just dorm food, Roy said. We don't have to eat here, though. We can go anywhere you want.
Don't be silly, this is fine,
Mrs. Daniels said.
Besides, I want to talk to your coach and see how things are going.
There's no need. They're going great.
Then you must be anxious to hear him tell me that himself,
Mrs. Daniels said knowingly.
It looks like the crowd is thinning out. You stay here while I go speak with him.
Yes, ma'am, Roy said.
He stayed put as his mother got up and stood in line with the other parents. His stomach twisted a bit. Yeah, he'd been able to keep up with the poundings Chad had been delivering for the past few weeks, but he still hadn't gotten a hit off yet. That had to reflect badly on his overall performance. Not to mention the fact that he'd only participated in 1 challenge battle last semester and had gotten his ass kicked. Sure, his grades had been all A's, but that had been all Herschel's doing. Much as he would deny it if anyone asked, Roy wanted to make his mother proud, too. Now, he had to trust in a progress report that would be delivered by Coach George, of all people, the man who seemed least impressed by Roy's substantial abilities out of anyone. This was going to be a bad day.
"Mrs. Daniels!"
Coach George greeted, shaking her hand carefully.
"Pleasure to meet you."
"You too, Mr. George. But how did you know who I was?"
"Just George is fine, and I make it a point to know the names and faces of all my students' parents,"
Coach George explained,
"in case one of them tries to jump me."
"That seems a bit paranoid,"
Mrs. Daniels said.
"It would be paranoid if I was doing it before any such situation had occurred. After that, it's called learning,"
Coach George countered.
"I see. At any rate, if you know who I am, then you know who I'm asking about. How is Roy doing in class?"
"How can I put this?"
Coach George said, pressing his thumb to his jaw as he pondered.
"Your son is arrogant, pig-headed, vastly overestimates his abilities, and spends too much time chasing tail instead of training. I've been expecting him to wash out since the first week, and at the beginning of this semester, I even put him up against the strongest kid in the class to see if he would flush down the drain once and for all."
"I'm not sure how to..."
Mrs. Daniels began. Coach George cut her off with a quick raise of his finger.
"But he is also incredibly resilient, unrelentingly determined, and has shown a tremendous amount of humility in accepting lessons from those who have proven themselves his better. When I challenged the combat class to take me on, he was the first one to step up, and that takes some courage. He's been getting the stuffing knocked out of him 5 days a week since the spring semester began, and every day he shows up asking for more. And he does it because he understands that each day makes him a little bit better."
"So, what are you trying to say here?"
Mrs. Daniels asked.
"I'm saying your boy has plenty of flaws, and very well might not make it all the way to being a hero because of them. He also has steel in his spine, fire in his gut, and balls the size of watermelons. Those might take him to the top. Honestly, it's just like the rest of this program. It will depend on the work he puts in,"
Coach George explained.
"Thank you, George,"
Mrs. Daniels said.
"That was enlightening."
"Glad to keep you in the loop,"
Coach George said with a smile.
"It was appreciated,"
Mrs. Daniels said, turning to leave.
"Have a nice day. I hope none of the parents jump you."
"That will be seen," Coach George said. "Not everyone got such kind reviews of their kids as you."
Roy's nervous waiting came to an end as he saw his mother leave Coach George's side. He clambered to his feet as she walked back over.
"What'd he say?"
Roy asked, poorly hiding the nerves in his voice.
"About what I expected,"
Mrs. Daniels replied.
"That you're good, but if you want to be the best, you still have a long road ahead of you." Although he said it in an exceptionally vulgar way.
"Yeah, that's Coach George," Roy said.
"He also mentioned you seem to be dating a lot of nice young girls. Do I get to meet any of them today?"
Roy, yes, Roy Daniels, blushed.
"Nah, Mom, it's nothing like that. I just have a lot of female friends."
"Mm-hmm. If that's what you want to go with,"
Mrs. Daniels said.
"It really is."
"Then I suppose we can skip over it for now. Besides, I think we're done here. Now how about you show me the town?"
Roy let a big grin break across his face.
"It would be my pleasure."
100.
That bad, huh? Nick asked.
Yeah. I spilled my tea, accidentally tripped the waiter, and briefly set the table on fire when I knocked over the centerpiece candle, Vince said. So her family is not all that fond of me.
I never thought of you as all that klutzy, Nick said.
Vince shrugged. I'm not normally, but I was so nervous about meeting my girlfriend's parents for the first time, I just got flustered. Nick and Vince sat in the common room, the Sunday afternoon light shining on them through the windows. All the parents but Herschel's had departed. He was saying goodbye to her in the parking lot currently. Alice was catching up on homework in her room, and Mary sat in a chair nearby, reading.
"You're still a nice guy, though," Nick pointed out. "I'm sure her parents were just glad she was spending time with a quality fella."
They kept mentioning a nice young super her uncle knew with coordination and exceptional powers. They were adamant she meet up with him for coffee the next time she is in town.
"Wow, they are not fans of fumbling," Nick said.
"Yeah. Apparently they're all about powerful supers good enough to breed with their daughter. Weird thing, though. As bad as last night went, Sasha was exceptionally affectionate when we kissed goodnight later on," Vince said.
"You really are clueless, buddy. Think real hard about why a girl with dyed pink hair might actually be happy to find out the guy she's with was not well-liked by her parents. When you come up with a theory, get back to me," Nick instructed him.
"I don't see why the hair is important, but okay," Vince agreed. The sound of the front door opening interrupted them as Herschel walked in.
"See your mom off?" Vince asked.
"Yep," Herschel confirmed. "It was nice to see her, but it's sort of weird having her around in this environment."
"Tell me about it," Nick agreed. "Jerry's a good guy, but he was all sorts of cramping my style. Didn't want to hit strip clubs or cockfights or anything."
"The visits all passed without any terrible incidents or blown secret identities, though, so I think we can chalk this weekend up as a win,"
Herschel said. "I'd wait to hear Vince's story about dinner with Sasha's parents before I made that statement," Nick said.
"Bad?"
Herschel asked. "I'm 70% sure they tried to sneak out and ditch me when I went to the bathroom," Vince said.
"That's pretty bad," Herschel surmised.
"What about you? Roy didn't get your mom into a biker brawl or tossed in jail or something?" Nick asked.
Herschel laughed.
"Roy? Roy loves our mother. They spent the afternoon touring little niche shops downtown. He's a model son when she's around."
"Huh, and there you go," Nick said. "Well, fellows, we only have a little bit of weekend left. Anyone up for video games in the boys' lounge?" Normally I'd say no, but with everyone gone, I was able to catch up on all my homework already, so why not? Vince agreed.
"Sweet. Herschel?"
"I'll join up with you guys in a few minutes," Herschel said. "I have to take care of something really quick."
"Cool deal," Nick said, pulling himself from the couch. He and Vince headed into the boys' area, the steel door locking firmly shut behind them. Herschel took a deep breath. He wasn't good at these sorts of things. That is to say, brave things. He preferred to let Roy handle that. Herschel was the brain and the heart. Roy was the brawn and the guts. It wasn't a perfect arrangement, but it had sufficed for many years. There was a flaw in that system, though. It didn't account for when Herschel needed bravery for something only he could do. Admittedly, such a scenario hadn't really come up before now. Personally, Herschel blamed his mother. She'd put the thought in his head, and it had stewed about all weekend. By the time he'd kissed her cheek goodbye, he had come to the undeniable realization that she was right. Admitting that was unfortunate, because it demanded action. He had to make a choice.
And even if he did nothing, he now knew that was a choice in itself. Herschel no longer had the convenience of self-deception. The only question left was if he had enough courage of his own to take the risk. Well, to be fair, that wasn't the only question left.
"Mary?"
Herschel said shakily, walking over to the chair where she was sitting.
"Yes?"
She looked up at him and set the book on her lap.
"I was wondering if you would like to go out sometime, to do something with me, if you wanted."
Mary arched an eyebrow.
"Could you elaborate?"
Herschel's stomach began gurgling. He sent it a mental note that it could complain and vomit in stress all it wanted in 5 minutes, but for now, it should please shut the fuck up.
"I want to take you on a date."
Herschel's eyes widened slightly. That was more straightforward than he'd been shooting for. Still, it was out there now. A slow smile crept across Mary's face.
"I'd like that. What did you have in mind?"
Just dinner on Friday. Off campus, of course. Around 7?
"Works for me,"
Mary said, straining to keep her own voice even and calm.
"It's a date."
"Awesome," Herschel said. "Cool. It'll be fun. Yeah. I'm gonna go play video games with Nick and Vince now. But I'll see you on Friday."
"We live in the same dorm. I'll see you before then,"
Mary pointed out.
"I get what you mean, though. See you then."
"Right,"
Herschel said. He then, in an act of wisdom well beyond his years, immediately retreated to the boys' lounge before he could say anything stupid and mess things up. For her own part, Mary waited until she was sure Herschel was staying behind in the other room before bolting out of her chair and dashing into the girls' side, banging on Alice's door. Interestingly enough, both sides had similar reactions to the news.
About freaking time. 101.
"So you finally did it," Nick said, slapping Herschel on the back. "What gave you the kick in the pants?"
"Something my mom said, actually,"
Herschel admitted.
"Make me grandbabies or don't bother coming home?" Nick asked.
"A touch more tactful than that. She just pointed out that it wasn't going to get easier at this point, and the longer I waited, the worse my chances got."
"Good for you," Vince said. "I bet you two have a great time. What are you planning?"
"Just dinner," Herschel said. "Someplace kinda nice, probably."
"Classic start," Nick said. "Then what?"
"I don't know. Digesting?"
"Right. Let me get this straight. You've been trying to ask this girl out for over 6 months. You finally got up the courage, and she agreed to be your date for an evening, and you don't plan to do anything besides go to dinner and come back?" Nick asked.
"It sounds really lame when you say it."
"I can't imagine why," Nick said, shaking his head. "Herschel, my boy, I don't know a lot of things about women. I know they like chocolate, shoes, and movies that induce crying. I know they get offended if you ask if their behavior is due to a regular monthly occurrence. I know that some of them get a little violent if you try to give them an innocent nickname."
"Sugar tits isn't what I'd call innocent," Vince interjected.
"Stay on subject, Silver. My point is that I know precious few things. But one of those is that a woman expects a little woo to be pitched on a first date," Nick said. "Assuming you want there to be a second one."
"I would very much like there to be a second one,"
Herschel said.
"Then we better get brainstorming, because a girl like Mary is going to take more than a chicken parmesan and some kind words to win over," Nick said.
"So where do you think he'll take you?" I'm not sure. Someplace nice, I'm sure, but hopefully not too fancy. I'm a simple girl, and I think Herschel knows that.
Mary said. Alice nodded her head in agreement.
He seems to be slightly less thick-headed than the other men we're surrounded by.
Mary laughed.
They might surprise you. Some of them are actually quite sharp.
I'm sure, Alice said. Before, she would have brushed off the comment as Mary being good-natured. Now, though, she once again found herself thinking about Nick's little transformation. Even if he could lie that well, there was no way he could keep it from Mary's telepathy. She had to have some inkling of what was going on in the head behind those sunglasses. Sadly, this wasn't the time to ask her about it. Right now was about Mary. And Herschel, to a similar extent.
Any clues on where he'll take you after dinner?
Alice asked. Mary blinked.
After? Yeah. I mean, he asked you on a date. You don't think he's planning on just driving to get food, then coming back and saying bye, do you? Sort of. Yeah.
Mary admitted.
Ah. Dates usually consist of more than just food. At least first ones do, anyway. It's the guy's chance to really show you how awesome he is, so they love doing it up big,
Alice explained.
I see. I suppose that doesn't seem so bad,
Mary said.
You know a lot about dates.
Only secondhand. The few times I ever went out with a guy were formal dinners where my dad wanted me to charm the son of some CEO or royalty, Alice said. They were prearranged events with chaperones, and the guys were always boring as hell.
That bites,
Mary said.
It did, but who cares? Those days are long since past. Now let's focus on you, little missy. Have you picked out an outfit yet? I was thinking the peach-colored dress?
Mary ventured very tentatively.
You know, that would work nicely,
Alice said. Mary let out a sigh of relief.
As a start,
Alice continued.
A start? Sure. It's a base layer. Dressing up is all about picking a base, then building tasteful accessorization on top of it,
Alice explained.
Don't worry. We've got nearly a week to play around with all kinds of combinations. By the time Friday night gets here, we'll have gone through every conceivable variety of outfit and picked the absolute best one. Oh, joy.
We've ruled out comedy clubs, movies, miniature golf, and strip clubs, though the last was under extreme protest, Vince surmised.
It's a touch of daring and adventure, Nick proclaimed. Plus, it puts the sex issue right on the table. It's perfect.
It's done, Nick. Let it go, Vince said. We're on to new suggestions now.
I'm running dry, Herschel said. You and Sasha have been together for a while now. What kind of first date did you take her on?
I just did dinner, Vince said. This whole woo-pitching thing is news to me, too.
Wait, you did just dinner?
Herschel turned to Nick.
If he got away with it, why can't I?
Several reasons, Nick said. For one, the whole lovably clueless thing works for Vince.
I'm not clueless,
Vince protested. Whatever you say, Cupcake. You don't have that type of charm. You're a smart, good-hearted guy. That means you're expected to do your research and put out some real effort, Nick said.
I guess I could see that,
Herschel agreed.
Secondly, ask yourself something. This is your first date with a girl you really like. Do you want to get away with half-assing it? Or do you want to leave her speechless?
Okay, point taken. I have to do more than just dinner. But we still haven't answered the question of what,
Herschel said.
I keep telling you guys, there is a gentleman's club south of town with exceptionally reasonable steak prices on Friday nights.
Still no on that one.
I think you have to ask yourself less of what you'd like to do and more of what Mary would enjoy, Vince said. It's about impressing her, so it needs to be something she'd have fun doing.
Carnival?
Herschel ventured.
That would actually work, if there were any going on right now, Nick said.
Damn, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be. Roy always made dating seem effortless, Herschel said.
That's because Roy didn't care, so he didn't put in effort, Nick pointed out. That's another type of charm, though, once again, a type you don't have.
Relax, Herschel. You've got most of a week till Friday. I'm sure you'll think of something, Vince assured him.
And if you don't, there's always steak and tits, Nick tossed out. Just saying.
102. Mary returned home from class on Tuesday to find Mr. Numbers setting up the chessboard in the common room.
"Is it Saturday already?"
Mary asked. Mr. Numbers shook his head.
"We missed our weekend game. I thought we might play today instead."
Mary paused for a moment, then walked over and set down her bag.
"Why not?"
Mary made the opening move, followed by Mr. Numbers. In the time they had been playing, she'd been slowly growing better. She was lasting a move or two longer each game so far, though Mr. Numbers anticipated her progress would reach a plateau within another 5 games.
"So what's on your mind?"
Mary asked as she shifted her knight's position.
"Just the game."
"Now I think we both know that's a lie,"
Mary said.
"Listening in?"
"Not during our games, no. But I've heard you long enough to know you're a creature of habit, and you'd rather miss a game than reschedule it,"
Mary said.
"True," Mr. Numbers said. "Mr. Transport and I have been entertaining the idea of another project, one that would require the assistance of you and Nick."
"I should warn you, I'm still putting extra blankets on my bed and drinking my tea hot as symptoms from the last project you two hatched."
"It's nothing like that," Mr. Numbers assured her. "This one would be both harmless in nature and universally beneficial."
"I'm sure."
"Are you willing to hear me out?"
"Yes,"
Mary said.
"If for no other reason than I'd rather be forewarned and forearmed."
Mr. Numbers carefully ran through the plan Mr. Transport had presented him some days before. He was careful to include every detail he had currently determined and to be absolutely truthful. Even if Mary really wasn't listening in right now, that didn't mean she wouldn't be checking in on him in time to come.
"I like it,"
Mary said,
"and I'm on board for it. I can't speak for Nick, though."
"I dare say no one could claim such an ability," Mr. Numbers remarked.
"Maybe, maybe not. Either way, you'll need him,"
Mary said.
"I was, unfortunately, certain you would say that."
"You're good at what you do. Anything else I should know?"
Mary asked.
"Indeed. Checkmate,"
Mr. Numbers said, moving his bishop and springing the trap he'd laid. Mary blinked.
"Did you distract me with this just to beat me?"
"Don't be silly," Mr. Numbers said. "It was a necessary conversation, and I don't need cheap ploys to beat you."
"Yet,"
Mary said. Mr. Numbers looked down at the small, unassuming girl and the confident look in her eyes. His brain buzzed, assessing the multiple factors he'd gleaned about her. Her ambition, her determination, her aptitude, and her focus.
"Yet,"
Mr. Numbers agreed, sweeping up the board and heading into his room. Nick was relaxing in the common room later that night flipping through television stations, when a flash of blonde hair and pink dress dropped into the seat next to him. Nick raised an eyebrow.
"Can I help you?"
"What?"
Alice said.
"Can't a girl sit down and watch some TV with her friend?"
"That depends," Nick said. "Is there a reason she needs to do it right next to him, as opposed to one of the many other scenic locations?"
He gestured at the empty common room and the abundance of seats contained within it.
"Oh no, I think proximity is very important. It fosters deep, intellectual conversations. Conversations about new developments, and what those new developments might be doing this weekend,"
Alice said.
"You want to know where Herschel is taking Mary on Friday?"
"See, I always told people how smart you were,"
Alice said.
"Liar."
"Admitted,"
Alice said.
"But I still want to know, so spill it."
Nick laughed.
"And why would I betray the secrecy of my dear friend for the curiosity of a girl who repeatedly hits me?"
"Well,"
Alice said, leaning forward slightly,
"maybe because a gesture of that sort would make her feel better disposed toward you. Maybe she'd show you a softer, kinder side."
"Yeah, not buying it."
"Fine. Then how about maybe because she's right next to you with her hand in punching range of your crotch?"
"Now see, that I believe," Nick said, shifting his leg slightly to provide cover. "Even if I wanted to tell you, though, I can't. As of when I last checked, Herschel doesn't even know what he's going to do with Mary after dinner."
"That sucks,"
Alice said.
"He better think of something soon. Mary's looking forward to a good night out."
"I'm sure our little nerd boy will come through in the clutch," Nick assured her. "He can be tenacious when the mood strikes him. Plus, Vince and I offered up a veritable plethora of helpful suggestions."
"Please. You probably suggested something moronic, like taking her to a strip club."
"I would never," Nick cried in a hurt tone. "I can't believe you think so little of me."
"Uh-huh. Whatever you say, stud. Let me know if he tells you anything,"
Alice said, getting off the couch.
"No promises, but if it's exceptionally interesting, I might seek you out," Nick said.
"That's probably as good as I'm getting out of you,"
Alice sighed.
"I'm going to go work on some chemistry. Night, Nick."
"Night, Alice," Nick said, giving her a perfunctory wave.
Once the door was closed, though, worry descended on his face. She'd been much more comfortable and familiar around him than normal. The whole mock flirting thing had demonstrated that amply well. Such an attitude could be problematic. The last thing he needed was her to grow so at ease around him their friendship developed into romance. No, it was best to nip this in the bud right away. Nick flipped out his cell phone and selected a number from its directory. That was the good thing about catching these situations early. They could often be resolved in a single phone call. 103. The concrete crunched under the forceful impact of Roy's substantial form crashing against it.
"Getting tired?"
Roy croaked from his prone position on the ground.
"That last one lacked your usual flair."
"Did it?"
Chad asked.
"I'll be sure to make up the difference on this one."
"I appreciate it,"
Roy said, pulling himself vertical.
"I'm not here for the B course, after all."
Chad did something then that Roy hadn't seen from him so far. Something that, to his knowledge, no one had witnessed. Chad laughed.
"You know, for all of your flaws, you've got tenacity,"
Chad said, chuckling to himself.
"It's refreshing, even after all these weeks. I'd started thinking there was no one who could take my strength and keep coming."
And all this from the guy who wasn't even worthy to fight you,
Roy said, smiling as he tried to get his feet steady.
Indeed, Chad said. It almost makes me wish you were on my level. I think fighting someone with your resolve at a higher talent level would benefit me greatly.
Then you take this as a Roy Daniels promise. When I'm stronger than you, I'll still be your sparring partner.
I appreciate the intent, Chad said, taking a stance as he prepared to bring Roy down again. You do know that you'll never be better than I am, though, don't you?
I know that you think that,
Roy said. He charged forward, left arm swinging around at Chad's head. Chad easily stepped to the side, caught Roy's arm, and wrenched it around to his back.
With moves like that, you'll be lucky to even land a blow on me before the year's end, Chad said.
He expected Roy to make another witty comment before Chad swept his legs out from under him and deposited him on the ground. What met his ears was something entirely different. Roy released a gut-wrenching scream, one that tore at his very vocal cords. Chad was taken by surprise. He was behind Roy, pulling Roy's left arm to his back against Roy's considerable struggling, ready to send him sprawling. It should have hurt him, yes, but not nearly enough for a reaction like that. Fleetingly, Chad wondered if his continuous beatings had somehow left lasting nerve damage that the healers hadn't gotten. It was only a half second of doubt and confusion, yet almost instantly, Chad realized what it had cost him. The fingers of Roy's right hand wrapped around Chad's left bicep. Chad felt the arm in his grip dangle weightlessly, his hold no longer effective, as Roy turned around to face him.
You ripped your entire left arm out of its socket?
And screamed loud enough to distract you while I did it, Roy said. See, for guys with our kind of strength, it's hard to tell the difference between regular struggling and bone-shattering effort. It all feels the same weighed against our power.
He was right. Chad had felt him buckling against his grip, but Chad had assumed it was merely his usual boisterous escape attempts.
A good point, Chad said. Now what, though? Your left arm is useless, and you know I'll break that grip you have on me in no time. You still can't win.
Newsflash, Blondie,
Roy said, gritting his teeth through the pain that his left arm was broadcasting.
I'm not trying to win.
In one motion, Roy jerked Chad forward, digging his hand deep into the arm and pulling forward with all his weight. Chad braced himself for a throw, reaching out for Roy's shoulder to reverse it before he was airborne. That was to his detriment, because too late, he realized the meaning of Roy's words.
Dodge, fucker,
Roy said, slamming his head directly into Chad's temple. The world dissolved into static, and Chad's head swam in pain. He wasn't so far gone that he forgot his years of experience, though, and by the time his vision cleared, he had placed Roy back onto the concrete with considerable force.
You lose yet again, Chad said, his vision clearing to reveal a badly battered Roy coughing up blood from the ground.
Yeah, I do,
Roy said, his voice ragged.
But I hit you.
Chad felt a soft trickle of blood run down his cheek. He sealed the cut on the side of his head immediately, but there was no denying the damage that had been dealt.
You tore your arm out of its socket,
and sacrificed every advantage in our confrontation, just to land one blow?
"Damn right," Roy said,